Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamari, Managing Director of Elkett Global. And it's my great pleasure to have with us today Knut Alike, partner of McKinsey and head of supply chain practice for Europe. He is also a visiting professor of supply chain at the University of Cologne and one of the global experts on the topics of operations, supply chain, and risk. Knut, pleasure to have you with us today, and thanks a lot for making the time.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Radu, for having me.
And I want to start, you know, with your personal story, because you had a fascinating career. I know you started as a research assistant at the Karlsruhe Institute of Technology, and then you kind of embarked on the consulting journey with a consulting company and ended up with McKinsey for many, many years. Now, obviously, also the position that you're in, whilst at the same time being a visiting professor, so kind of following your passion for education. So tell us just a little bit about, you know, about yourself and how that kind of came into fruition.
Sure, happy to do so. So indeed, I spent my life in supply chain. That's what I kind of discovered for myself like 25 years ago, that this is a topic that is super interesting, nicely complex. So I first did my PhD and my habilitation, as we call it in Germany, on that topic. And then started with today, you would call it a startup. It was basically a spin-off of the institute I worked on, where we did planning software for big companies like Hewlett Packard. And back then, I thought that, hey, all of this is pretty cool. And it will probably be kind of 10 years from now where all of these topics will be solved. But now we see that people are still working on these topics. So here, got into the let's say, technical part of supply chain. And then I joined McKinsey, indeed, where I'm now since 16 years. And here, kind of even broadening the scope, always working in supply chain, but all topics of planning, of physical flow, organization, transformation, and so on. And always looking for the new topics, right? So supply chain 4.0 came up, looking into what can digital help us. Then the recent developments in terms of risk and resilience that always I found very, very interesting. And at the same time, keeping my passion for education. And this both within McKinsey, where we have also a huge chunk of capability building that we do for our clients, but then also at the university, right? So in Cologne, where I teach supply chain and an executive MBA and also run a seminar on supply chain games, which is quite interesting to kind of see how students develop games to explain a complex topic. So supply chain is what I'm really passionate about. And maybe a kind of a small side story, I was not so sure whether I should become a supply chain professional or a musician. And that's where I did practice a lot when I was younger, played the jazz saxophone. And that's where, during my master, I basically took a semester off and studied music and then came back to supply chain.
Mm. No, that's fascinating. So, and actually, I'll tell you a side story once we finish. But I actually know another professional that is also part-time musician. Or I think he says that he's a full-time musician and part-time he works in supply chain. So interesting, also to kind of broaden your horizon and creativity, I guess, on that front. Now moving to the business side, and you in your position and at McKinsey, obviously you interact with some of the biggest companies in the world. I'm curious, and let's maybe start with the current reality and COVID-19 and all of that. But what are some of the biggest challenges that your clients are coming to you right now as we speak, and what's keeping them up at night, right? And what's some of the biggest topics that keep these supply chain executives globally wondering how to fix?
Yeah. So in times of COVID, it's very, very clear. It's ensuring supply and predicting demand, right? Because with this pandemic, it's kind of the first time that really supply and demand is affected, and this also on a global scale. So question is saying, what should we do, right? And it's very interesting kind of looking into the when all this started in March, where clients kind of asked the question, hey, how will it develop, right? How will demand be? But then after a couple of weeks, because the supply chains from China to Europe are a couple of weeks often, if you go sea freight, then the question is, till when will we see a shortage in supply? So quite clear question, and what should we do about it? So this is kind of, and we'll talk about this a bit more in detail. This is kind of COVID related. If I just look a little bit on the broader scheme, it is the big topics on how can I leverage digital to increase my performance. Then a lot of companies, our clients are still in terms of their organizational setup, they're still kind of in a world where you have more or less a siloed organization. You have the infrastructure is mainly Excel. So kind of how to boost this supply chain organization setup operating model to the next level, and with this increase the performance significantly. And then it's always kind of one question that then always pops up is indeed how to communicate supply chain, how to make it real for the board, how to ensure that the board understands the importance of supply chain.
And on this topic of how to, I just want to double click a little bit, how to make sure that the board understands the importance. What are some of the practical and very pragmatic advice or steps that you would suggest? I mean, as I know it's hard sometimes to make general advices and give general advices, but what would be some, you know, top of the mind that you saw work well? And sometimes it can be quite obvious and maybe supply chain executives are not doing it in their board presentations.
So maybe to start with what is not working, and we all in supply chain love our numbers, right? We love our complex algorithms. And if we come with too much numbers, too much complexity, then this clearly does not work. So we need to kind of clearly have a business view. So what is supply chain contributing to? How is supply chain helping to sell more and to satisfy our customer, right? So if we clearly take a customer back view, then this is the major contribution of supply chain. And in these crazy days of COVID, supply chain clearly lifted up, right? So because everyone was talking about supply disruptions. So this is something that we can use to also tell the story, not only that we do firefighting, we kind of short term have some control towers in place that we do scenario planning, but we can also kind of make the story very clear that supply chain helps to secure supply. And with this, we are kind of ensuring that we are able to sell more and have a good service level. So it would be super to use the current times to tell the story of the importance of supply chain.
Maybe
one idea that I always discuss with my clients is that the supply chain department often does not necessarily have a budget for supply chain marketing or supply chain communication in place. And this is the best companies where the board understands supply chain. They always have this, right? So they kind of see the importance, and they also take professionals that can kind of tell a story, that can kind of think about what is the important message, and with this are successful.
And I want to, because I personally believe they're doing an incredible job at this particular way of marketing. I mean, on top of the fact that the principle is incredibly good and we need to, and more companies need to follow, but I think Unilever, in terms of all the different stories that they're putting out, right? And it is ultimately marketing of some very good initiatives that they're taking, right? For carbon neutral, for tracing, and basically making sure that materials that they use, ingredients that they use are done in a fair and well manner. And they pretty much do this very well on this piece of making sure that they are telling a story and they are telling to the world how they're making a difference. And I would agree with you that this needs to be done more, because that's also a part of the way in which supply chain gets even more to the forefront. COVID has helped a lot, because all of a sudden business leaders and CEOs and boards realize that, well, we don't know where our stuff is. We don't know when it's going to reach our clients. So we have a pretty significant issue and the business can actually go to pieces if we don't. But this storytelling and marketing is another crucial piece to the puzzle. So thanks a lot for kind of reinforcing that message. And I know that you put together a very insightful piece on resetting supply chains for the new normal. I think it was one of the well-documented thought leadership articles that McKinsey puts together. And in that article, you kind of had a number of 93% of the leaders in supply chain plan to increase resilience. And part of the way in which they plan to do that is dual sourcing of raw materials, inventory increases, nearshoring, regionalization of supply chains. So I want to talk specifically about that. I think there's been also the topic, China will no longer be the manufacturing factory of the world, or China plus one strategy, right? Where you have several alternatives, or hopefully at least one alternative to China. Do you see that happening right now in the short term, in the long term, in the midterm? How accurate, I mean, how fast is that actually going to happen? Because in principle, yes, we need it. But in practice, with COVID, it's not that easy to achieve.
Yes, exactly. Fully agree. So let me maybe kind of step back a bit on what we researched in this article, and then go a bit more into detail on kind of nearshoring, reshoring, localization. So we were interested in how did heads of supply chain of different industries globally manage the COVID crisis and what will happen in the future, right? So do they believe that things will change or not? And indeed, the increase of resilience is, it's kind of a natural answer, right? So you are in the middle of a crisis and ideally the resilience should increase. If it's quite interesting, if we would have this question like during Fukushima or the Thailand flood and so on, probably a lot of people would also have answered that we need to increase resilience. Back then, after 6 months, after everything stabilized, nothing really happened. So why is it different this time? Because it's really a global pandemic. There is a lot more shocks than the pandemic. There's trade war and so on going on. So that's why we see a lot of our clients are now really looking into increasing the resilience. Now, the topic of nearshoring and regionalization, that is something where we already see since many years, there was an MGI report out on global flows that there is a trend to be more regional, right? So this is kind of due to COVID, this is accelerated. And what we analyzed in, we also have an MGI report out on supply chain risk and resilience, where we looked a little bit more into detail of what is actually the volume that could possibly be relocated. And this is a huge number, right? So it's a number of north of $4 trillion. And what we did is we basically looked for the different industries. We looked into what is economic factors and what is non-economic factors. And the non-economic factor is quite interesting because there's kind of, if you look into the pharmaceutical industry, and in Europe, there is a lot of discussion. All the ministries of health discuss whether the API production should be localized, should be kind of in the region in Europe, because there is a huge number produced in India and China. And governments realize that, hey, we depend on these API production, so we need to put it more local. There is kind of, from an economic point of view, that is probably hard to judge, but the governments put some regulations on, or will put some regulations on, that this will happen. So we see that kind of depending on the industry, there is kind of between kind of 5 to 50-60% of the exports that have the, let's say there is a probability that this is. Now the question is, how fast will this be done? There's a lot of discussions we have with clients. They ask, hey, but we cannot relocate in 6 months, right? And this is super clear. And this is also not something that will be done short term. So we will not see kind of a rush of relocation. Also because companies are now in financial, not all are in financial distress, but everyone needs to basically be aware of their cash flow. So they need to make sure that this is not rushed. But whenever there is a new evaluation of a supplier, whenever there is a new evaluation of a location, this will be clearly taken into account, and the resilience factor will be much more important than before. So what I see is it's clearly a trend. It's not the short-term trend of the next month. It's more the mid-term trend, and this will lead to more regionalization. And you mentioned already that there is this China plus one strategy that a lot of companies go after, and countries like Vietnam benefit a lot from this. And this is something that will be accelerated by COVID.
Because specifically, I mean, if we were to, and you gave a very good example, right? Pharmaceuticals, healthcare industry. I think I was reading, and I might be wrong about the numbers, but something like all the paracetamol or something like that in US was 93% or 5% coming from India or export. I mean, imported from somewhere, right? And you probably don't want to be that dependent on that end. That makes a lot of sense, and maybe to a certain extent that can be quite accelerated and moved quite fast. However, if we take electronics, or you know, let's specifically say, okay, making a laptop, right? You have the whole ecosystem. You have the factories, you have the microchips, yes. You have the ports and so on. I mean, it's not as easy as just taking the factory and putting it in Mexico or in wherever, Eastern Europe or wherever it may be, right? You need to have the whole ecosystem of suppliers, okay. and that just, I actually got asked, and there's somebody doing a study at the moment in Asia, and she was asking me a question on this, and I don't have the data, but I just don't see this happening that fast because of, you know, yes. Obvious considerations and difficulties. So to your point, it will take, you know, it will happen in phase, and then probably some industries will be much faster than others.
And it's a very important point that you raise in terms of capabilities. So it's not that kind of China is the manufacturing hub of the world. It's also that this kind of also attracts a lot of capabilities, right? And if you want to move there, you need to kind of build the local capabilities. If you want to move from China to Eastern Europe, for example, you need to build the local capabilities. So that's why it's more kind of a midterm topic and not a short-term topic. And then it's also very clear that there is industries like semiconductors where you have huge capex, and this does not move easy, right? So the huge capex combined with a very high value density, which makes air freight the standard mode of transport, basically means that the world is only a couple of days away. And with this, there will be no kind of immediate relocation. But there's a lot of other industries, pharmaceuticals and other discrete manufacturing, where this is clearly to be considered in the future.
Mm. And I also want to go a little bit deeper on that. You had three big points, right? So one was resilience in the study. You had one, the fact that executives want to increase resilience in supply chain. The second one was changes in supply chain planning. And the third one was on digital supply chain talent. So I just want to go on the second point as well, on the supply chain planning side. And you had the number that 54% expect changes in terms of how they do planning and S&OP and IBP or whatever you want to call that. My personal experience with a lot of clients, and I had one sharing actually on the last summit that we organized, a lot of companies still don't actually have much in this space. So whilst we like to talk about the AI and machine learning and advanced analytics and data lakes and all these buzzwords, in reality, there's a lot of companies that even don't have a proper system of S&OP and visibility in terms of what is happening. And they can be even within the Fortune 500, Fortune 1000, maybe the big ones are not in that position. But I guess, do you see an acceleration of them adopting these systems faster? Or what would the Excel-focused or Excel-bound organizations do in this situation, right, specifically for supply chain planning?
Yeah, very good question. And to start the answer, we also asked the question, did you face any issues in planning during COVID? And that is quite interesting, that we have basically 48% of the companies did experience delays. And this is typically the Excel heavy companies. This is where we don't have an integrated end-to-end process. S&OP is not yet set up in the right way. We don't have the planning infrastructure. 52% said, hey, it was no problem. And it was also interesting in March, I had a couple of conversations where I asked my clients how they now kind of moved into this lockdown. And that also reflected this number. Roughly half said, look, we have our planning system, we have our end-to-end processes, we have our people trained. They just are not in the office, they're at home, but everything works. So there's no problem. And the others, kind of more working on Excel, basically said that, look, we have no visibility. It takes very long to plan. So we cannot just do an MRP run every day or every hour. That's just not possible. So every morning we sort of say, go to the receiving area and see whether we received enough components to produce. So this is kind of the reality, right? And these companies clearly need to accelerate. The others also need to accelerate. So if we now go back to what these heads of supply chain want to do going forward, and there is basically three topics. One is they want to kind of centralize the supply chain planning more. And this is quite interesting. If you have, and this is kind of more for the more advanced that already have some infrastructure processes and so on set up. If you have everything working, then there is no need necessarily for the supply chain planning to be kind of decentralized. It might even not be necessary for the production planner to sit next to the production line, because all the data is anyhow available, right? So here kind of to centralize and then make it much simpler for people to exchange, to build capabilities, to jump in if someone is out. There are some consumer goods companies that are already very good in this, where they have even shared service centers for supply chain planning, which is forecasting, which is S&OP, which is inventory optimization, production planning, supply planning. So that is quite interesting. Then what a lot of companies did is they increased the frequency of planning. So before we were planning weekly, we had maybe a monthly S&OP cycle. And because of the crisis, we needed to be much more agile. We needed to be much more to the point. So what a lot of companies did is they just went to a weekly S&OP cycle. And guess what? It did work, right? So if you kind of are forced to do this, then you can squeeze it into a week. Maybe the result is not perfect as it would be in a month, but it gives you a much higher agility because you now have four times where you check. And this is something that people will keep. The companies that are in the camp that is more kind of Excel-based clearly see the need to do something, right? They might have seen this before already, but now it's even more clear to our earlier point on communication. Now it's much easier now to tell the story of, hey, we need to do something. We need to have proper processes. Our people need to understand supply chain. Often in these companies, it's supply chain as an organizational entity does exist, but it's often the former logistics guys that just kind of put a new title on their name card. So we need to have also the capabilities increased to be able to plan. And clearly here, all digital tools and advanced analytics and machine learning and so on helps. But a lot of companies need to first fix the basics. Very, very clear. We love to talk about digital, but the majority of companies are still very analog and need to fix the basics. But the good thing is that you can then kind of jumpstart. You can, so to say, leapfrog and implement the new solutions already. And this will clearly then help you in your supply chain performance. But always think about the talent you need for that, right? It's often you need to kind of rebuild the talent. You need to educate the people that they are able to work in these new processes.
And since you mentioned the topic of talent, and that was the next one that I would have asked you, and the 90% of the respondents in your study also plan to increase digital supply chain talent in-house. Let's talk a little bit about that. And also it's an area that I believe you are very passionate about. I'm very passionate about. So love to hear your thoughts and expand on and zoom in on this.
Yes. So to the discussion we just had on, hey, do we have the right process and tools in place? Heads of supply chain apparently see a need to increase the digital savviness of their teams. What we often see is indeed that we might even have a good planning system in place, but the planner who, let's say, has a lot of experience in the environment and business and so on, but is not necessarily kind of educated in terms of machine learning, mathematical optimization or so, does not trust, and this planner does not trust the system itself. And with this, what we often see is that stuff is then downloaded from the planning system, kind of planned manually, and then uploaded again. So if we now think about the needs for this new normal, which is we need to have transparency, we need to have a high cycle of planning, high frequency, we need to, in demand planning, we need to make sure that we have all of these external factors considered, then there is clearly a need to upgrade our capabilities. And the question, and if you also think about the future of work, right? So we kind of thought about what is the next generation supply chain organization? How does it look like? And it's before you had a demand planner, you had a supply planner, you had people who probably handled inventory and then physical flow. In the future, you will probably have in the demand planning, you will have some data scientists, right? You will have in order management, you have some people who are setting up the RPA, the robotic process automation system. So there is new needs, and this is something that we need to work on. So where do we get the talent from? And this is where I also found it interesting that 70% said that we need to reskill. So we have our people, they're good people, they know the business, and they don't yet have, so to say, the full spectrum of these new tools, approaches. So we need to reskill them. But as well, we need to make sure that we have new talent acquired from the labor market, which is 55%. And here, it's very important. If you look back in terms of digital, a lot of people started to hire data scientists, which per se also makes sense. Then we had this digital entities or departments in companies where they kind of started to work on topics. And often they were good ideas, but often it was also not so really linked to the business. So what is very important here is that these digital talents that are new, that they kind of work with a translator, right? So that someone who knows the business, who also knows digital, and maybe not so much in detail, but can kind of guide these people to have impact. So also here, something that we see that supply chain, heads of supply chain were already working on over the last years. And with COVID, it now boosted and accelerated.
Mm. And the point that you're making is something that we come across quite often, because on the executive search side of our business, it's almost quite cool. And we've gotten a few assignments where specifically the companies asked to know, we want the chief information officer, CIO or CTO, and we want them to come from gaming or from Facebook or from Google, and they're highly, I don't know, manufacturing company or very product production company. And in principle, it sounds like a good idea for, you know, for bringing in new viewpoints. However, also in practice, like you rightfully said, there needs to be some level of translation happening, because it can also be too, I don't know if this term exists, but too revolutionary and too out of whack or out of context, that you basically miss out on the nitty gritty of the business, which possibly, you know, it cannot be done. Even if you think it can be done in practice, in theory, it can be done. In reality, it cannot be done. So then you basically end up with a different situation. And we've had some of the clients that actually tried to train the data scientists in-house. So they took either people that had very analytical or from solution design or from different aspects of supply chain network design, and then kind of enrolled them in these trainings, because those people would already understand supply chain. And then they tried to upskill them to get the data science piece.
So
I want to also bring the educational piece, right? Because you mentioned this reskilling labor force, but that can be daunting task. It can be it's a funny story. I won't mention the name of chief supply chain officer that said something to the extent that we have all the technology, we have we're very clear where we need to go, we are implementing changes in our systems very fast. Our issue is only one: the people don't want to change. And the people are not coming on board with the new technology. So I guess trying to formulate the question while I'm asking, what are some of your, and this, you have a bit of a double hat, right? You have the hat of McKinsey and seeing some of these changes happen. You have also the hat of you as a visiting professor. What works best, right, when you talk about reskilling and educating the workforce to the new tech, to the new way of thinking?
Yeah.
It's a big question.
So it's indeed a big question. So maybe why is this capability topic important? Let me maybe start with this. The example you gave is exactly right. So we have the tech available, but unfortunately the people don't want to use the tech, right? So that's what we often see. And we have a model that we call the influence model. And this influence model basically says that when do I change? And there's four elements. And one of these elements, and there's like, hey, we need to have a role modeling. So my boss is also kind of following this new idea. I understand the purpose, right? I understand why I need to do this. There is clear processes set up, but then very, very important, I have the right capabilities, right? And otherwise I will not change. And this is exactly what happens in this example you gave, that we have all the tech available, but I don't have the capability, so I don't use the new system. So how can we overcome this? What we typically do is, so first of all, it does not work if you have kind of a standard course and you log in online. There's plenty of, let's say, university professors, and they record their lectures. And I find myself also in the situation that if you watch such a lecture, then after 5 minutes you start to do your emails. So it needs to make sense for the people that you train. So first of all, you need to understand what is their baseline. So you need to do a bit of an assessment of where are the capability gaps. And then there is often different levels of intervention. There is, let's say, a big group of people who need to understand the basics of supply chain, where you have whatever, a 1 hour, 2 hour session. Ideally you do this in person, where you kind of introduce the idea of supply chain. And this, the purpose is really that, hey, I've heard it, I like it, and I understand that this will help us going forward. This is often hundreds or thousands of people. And then you go into the people who really kind of work close to supply chain, not only in the supply chain organization itself, but also in sales, in marketing, in production, in procurement. And here you do a bit of a more intense training. And this is what we always do, is you need to have a combination of, let's say, you need to convey the theory, but you need to immediately apply it. right? And this is where kind of all these games and exercises and discussions come into play. You can show pages and explain concepts for something like 15 to 20 minutes, then people are not listening anymore. So you need to kind of help them to apply it immediately. So kind of having an exercise where you apply the learning and then make it real for them. So to kind of tie it to the transformation itself. So always link it to this. So what we typically do is we use then a kind of a sample company that is made up, and it's from a characteristic similar to the company we help to make sure that they don't kind of go back into their normal reaction. And then with this company, we then train these people. And then we blend it also with online, where we have modules to also explain the content, and then kind of interactive exercises where you need to then work on a specific topic. And then very important, and there is also, it's called field and forum, where you have then small tasks to work on. And this is always related to the transformation itself. And these small tasks, you then apply immediately the stuff you learned, right? And then after a couple of weeks, you have the next intervention where you have the next training session. And with this, you kind of continue in your learning journey, which is then often something of a couple of months that you kind of create this this bench of people who know supply chain. And then it's clearly kind of an ongoing learning effort where you then also have kind of, you share podcasts like the one you do, right? So where kind of people then get inspiration from other companies and ideas to put forward.
Oh, some great ideas and examples. Thanks a lot, and very practical as well. One last question in terms of, I wanted to ask you, you know, looking back on your progress and for the younger, you know, for the younger generation and the younger people that are following the podcast, what would be some pieces of advice that you would have for them in terms of, yes, planning their careers or thinking about their careers and in general in their professional life?
Yeah, so it's very simple. Always follow your passion. I never planned my career. I was always excited to kind of do supply chain. That is my topic, right? Others have other topics. And then make sure that you work in an organization where you can kind of further develop your skills, where you have great people to have good exchange of ideas. And with this, you develop yourself forward. There's often in my lectures, students ask whether, hey, should I stay in academia? Should I go into industry? Should I go into consulting? And there is no right or wrong, right? So it's kind of, if you understand your passion, and your passion in whatever, if you're young, is more to do deep research, stay in university. If your passion is, hey, I want to help business, go into industry. If you want to go more broader, then go into consulting. But you need to be passionate about it. And I never planned my career. I'm not so sure whether this is a good advice for young people. Don't plan your career, follow your passion. But that's what I would do.
No, thanks for, and I just feel the need to add something to that, because you know, we have career ladders, and I recently read a book by Sheryl Sandberg, the CEO of Facebook, and she mentions that forget the career ladder, because ladders are not a good analogy, because ladders, you can go up, down, on and off. There's four options. That's about it. We should think about careers as, she named them jungle. I think it's a jungle gym. I had to Google it, but anyway, it's kind of think like a playground for kids, right? Where you have, and I have two small kids, right? Where they have, you know, the ladders, and then you have the ropes, and then you have all sorts of different ways in which you can climb, you can jump, you can go sideways, upwards, downwards, you know, basically infinite possibilities. And that analogy to me is a very good one, because it's to your point, you know, also for us whilst, you know, in headhunting, and a lot of people ask us, you know, what's the next move? Does this make sense to our careers? And for me, I am kind of the same as you. I never planned for my career in that way, right? As long as you're following what you like to do, but at the same time, of course, you need to deliver and add value and all the good stuff. Things, it builds upon, right? And it's almost like building blocks that you know, like Steve Jobs, right? When you look backwards, it makes sense. You can't really figure it out necessarily all the time and plan for all the steps looking forward. So, glad that you also mentioned that. And look, great sharing. And thanks a lot for joining us today, Knut. And I'm sure we can talk for hours, and we'll have you back. But really appreciate all the good examples that you shared.
Super. Thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it. Thanks, Adi.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.